Hey, everybody, Matt, Jess and Dave here.
Sorry, Jess, just butting in quickly to let the listeners know that I'm going to be in Sydney this week, coming up the 8th to the 12th of May, and you can get tickets now via mattshieldcomedy.com, then going straight to Brisbane on the 16th to the 19th. So tickets for my show Dryer Dryer in Sydney and Melbourne.
Sorry, Matt, I'll just cut you off there. I just need to tell everyone that our quiz show, our web series, is out right now. Do go on the quiz show. You can see it on Stupid Old Channel for free on YouTube. Type in "Do Go On The Quiz Show" and you can see three episodes right now covering topics like Google, Queen Victoria, the Olympics, and we got five more episodes coming up. So like and subscribe, whatever that means.
They are big topics too. And I said Sydney and Melbourne. I meant Sydney and Brisbane. Anyway, let's get on with the show.
I'm still here too.
Oh, hey, Jess.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Do Go On. My name is Dave Warnocky, and always I am here.
Always and forever, Dave.
I never leave this room. But when I am in this room, sometimes I'm joined by Jess Perkins and Matt Stewart. Hello.
Hi, I'm Matt Stewart.
Oh, hi, I'm Jess Perkins. You can call me Jess.
Yeah, I will, Jess.
I wonder how many times we've done a joke like that.
Never.
What joke?
In the world.
I'm Matt. He has no idea.
Hang on.
He's so fucking stupid.
I wonder what he thinks the joke is.
Great question, Jess.
Is it because me, Jess, would normally say, you can call me Bop?
Yeah.
Very good joke. Anyway, let's get on with the show, Matt and Dave. That was close. That was real close.
Well, I don't know who I am anymore, but it's great to be here with two people.
Two
of whom I have equal respect for.
Thank you very much. Anyway, on this show we do here, the three of us, you, Dave, me, Matt, or Jess, or whatever we are now, and Jess or Matt over there. Each week we rotate between us to do a report on a topic that the other two do not know what it is. It's been suggested by a listener or voted on by a listener. This week it's Dave's turn. He's going to tell Jess and I, he's going to school us in a topic.
Oh, I'm excited.
He starts it off with a question to get us on topic. Dave, please ask your question.
All right, to get us on topic. Now, lately I've been enjoying how we've done so many episodes now that a lot of the topics have started crossing over or making reference to other. You're like, oh, that was during a similar time. Well, this is a direct spin-off. Of a Jess report.
Of a Jess report? The second best kind of report. Fuck you, Matt. Fuck you.
Oh, is it going to be Prince Charles? She did Queen Elizabeth II.
I mean, I've done
I did Queen Elizabeth II. That was me.
What?
I noticed you wrote that in the Patreon. That was me.
I don't know what that means.
What?
Because you both love the Queen.
Oh, who doesn't?
Oh,
I merged you guys together.
Did you see that video of her recently losing her shit because cows are there?
Yeah.
Oh, cows! Very so good. Fucking cute.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
I'll show you later.
I'm stopping the recording to find this video. So and we're back. It was very funny. Okay,
What's your question, Dave? I interrupted you saying my question to ask you what your question was.
I'm
the worst person in the world.
All right. Which German POW camp was our mate Charles Upham sent to?
You did Charles Upham, so Jess will know for sure. So,
Matt's off the hook? I remember we talked. I talked super briefly about it, and then other people commented, "I'm like, you should do a whole report on that." And now because I can't remember the name at all.
At the time, I said, "Oh, that's really interesting. I should do a report on that." And we got a lot of people saying, "Do that report." So I've been thinking about doing it for a long time. It's a castle.
Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. I can't think of the name. Give me the first letter. I'm not going to remember anyway.
It also starts with C. Bit of alliteration.
Charles Castle.
Close enough. Colditz Castle.
Yeah, I got it. Woo! Perkins.
Charles, so it's all about the architecture this episode?
Yes, and I go through every single archway. Just the archways of Colditz Castle.
Wow.
A 9-hour report.
Strap in, everyone.
No, so Charles Upham was sent to Colditz Castle in 1944. And so at the time I said, we should do a report on that. And a few people requested it as a topic, including Ryan Messer, Maddie Ray, Jack LeSueur, Victor Gemino, Curtis Bennick, and Alan Theobald. So thank you for all those people.
Awesome.
It's quite a few.
Quite a few.
So apart from Charles Upham being sent there in 1944, you don't know much
about
the castle. Matt, have you heard of Colditz Castle?
I vaguely remember it from that report.
Yeah, I would have, like, if I was looking at a Wikipedia article, I would have clicked on that hyperlink and read sort of the intro about it and gone, oh, yeah, and then gone back to what I was reading before.
Is this would you call this a prequel or a sequel?
Oh.
A prequel that then runs alongside and then overtakes.
Wow. Amazing.
And then, well, actually, you did finish the whole of Charles Upham's life, so then it overtakes it briefly. Only to end with a flashback.
It's bloody neck and neck.
Oh, wow.
Credits at the start.
It's complicated.
I'm really excited. Let's get cracking.
So
really
Colditz Castle is conveniently found in the town of Colditz, which is near Leipzig, which is Germany's 10th most populous city. That's the closest big city.
Most popular.
That's right. They voted
by other cities.
It's voted by German magazine.
Oh.
Wow. That's the big one.
That's the one you want.
Oh, yeah. Built high up on a hill overlooking a village, Colditz Village, and the river below.
It's built high on a hill.
With a lonely goat herd, is that what you're thinking? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Couldn't help but think that. I reckon people around the world just thought that.
I don't know what's that reference?
Sound of Music. Another Nazi thing.
Right. And unbelievably, I have never seen it.
Huh.
Huh.
There you go. Built high up on a hill overlooking a village and some sort of goat reference. A castle of some description has been on the site for nearly 1,000 years. And since that time, it's been added to or completely rebuilt a number of times in a number of architectural styles. So there's the architecture, Matt. It's been used for a number of uses over the 1,000 years, including as just a castle. Also as a workhouse to feed the poor, a place to look after the ill, a place where people who had been arrested were temporarily stored, a mental institution, and a place for people suffering from tuberculosis.
What a versatile house.
It's had a lot of uses.
I like that the first one was as a castle. It's like it's just a house then, isn't it?
It's pretty unimaginative.
Yeah.
What can we use this castle for? Oh, I think we could use it for Unterkassel.
Yeah.
We'll add that to the suggestion list. First, we'll look after people with tuberculosis. We might come back to castle later. When the Nazis gained power during 1933, they converted the castle into a political prison for people they considered undesirable, mainly communists, homosexuals, Jews, and other marginalised groups. There you go. Then World War II broke out. Germany started taking many prisoners of war, some of whom tried to escape. A few of these were so good at escaping that no matter where they put them, they seemed to be able to get out.
Mm.
So a special high-security prison was needed for these prisoners, and Colditz Castle was chosen, and it was renamed Offlag 4C.
Jesus, such cold names.
No, Colditz Castle sounds so cool.
Offlag.
Offlag 4C.
When a number and a letter, that's just like, that's making it like real cold and scientific or something.
Mm.
Somehow they made the name Colditz more cold.
Yeah.
As I said before, built on a rocky outcrop. So if you look at it, it's sort of like surrounded by cliffs and you're like, oh, it's going to be pretty hard to get in there.
Oh.
You know, like you imagine like an Edinburgh Castle type thing.
Yeah.
Not as dramatic as that, but that kind of thing. The security was deemed to be state of the art. The prison was surrounded by barbed wire and would be completely lit up at night by searchlights. Colditz has walls that are an average of 6 feet thick, and in some places the walls are 3 meters thick.
What?
That seems unnecessary.
That seems pretty ridiculous. Crazy.
Great insulation, though. You'd stay real cool in summer.
Oh, totally. And the recording studio, you can't hear a thing.
Oh, that'd be great. How would it be, though, in winter? Would it be cold?
Yes.
Hard to heat, too?
But it would retain the heat. So if you had a heat source inside, it would hold it in.
Spoken like a true former air conditioner salesman. There was one guard for every prisoner keeping an eye on them, which is crazy.
One for one.
That does, it really does sound like if you weren't, if you just heard you had everyone there had their own servant, basically, and you were staying in a castle, you'd be like, this sounds great.
The ratio is less extreme when you take kindergartners on an excursion.
Oh, way less extreme.
It's like one adult for five kids. That's crazy. But then wouldn't you form a bond with them? You'd have a bit of Stockholm syndrome, I reckon.
Well, in some cases, they really respected each other.
Wow.
German and the prisoners.
Cool.
Our prisoners were kept in a special section of the castle in a walled 30-meter high medieval courtyard, so 30 meters high. So a lot of the time they felt like they were always in shadow because the walls were so high. And then in a German winter, you don't get much sun at all. And if they made it out of there, there was a sheer 40-meter drop to contend with, as well as a machine gun nest that could shoot them to pieces.
A nest of with a mama machine gun.
Regurgitating
bullets.
Wait,
is there a phone call? hello? Machine gun nest.
I'm a little bit busy. Just trying to feed my child.
Go for machine gun. Uh-huh. Yes, I'll hold.
I'll just put you through now. I'm trying to think of I can't do a better machine. That's a fart. What? Is the nest, are they a little gassy? Can you do a good, I reckon when I was a kid I could have done a sweet machine gun noise.
That deserved the self thumbs up you gave.
Is there some sort of baby goat inside the nest? It sounds like when Mo's doing the barnyard animal noise and no one can guess what it is.
A baby duck. Yeah. He's right. About the duck.
About everything, damn it.
Real good bit.
So basically, the odds are against you of getting out. Inside the prison were captured soldiers from England, France, Serbia, Poland, Australia, New Zealand, and Belgium. So you put your baddest of the bad from across Europe. The best escape is in one place where you can keep an eye on them, right? Sounds like a good idea, but then it sort of backfires a bit because the problem was that when you get people that are experts at escaping and put them all in one place, you accidentally create a centre of excellence for the
You've basically done the Motley Crue, like that movie trope. We got a safe crack. We got
you've got all the
an explosive expert.
That's right. You just put together Ocean's 11.
We have a contortionist.
That's Ocean's 11, yeah.
And you've just said, I bet you can't escape from this. Yeah, and they're all like, well, we've got years at a time to work shit out. Let's have a go.
Yeah, we can brainstorm here.
In fact, a friendly rivalry developed among the different nationalities. The officers competed for the highest number of what they called home runs or successful escapes. Basically, if you got someone from your country, they got back home or to a safe country, the prisoners of your nationality got a home run.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
So it's like now it's a game.
Yeah.
So it does sound like it wasn't the worst place to be.
I mean,
they got games.
You're still a prisoner.
I would have thought a Nazi concentration camp.
No, so there's a big difference between a concentration camp and a prisoner of war camp. Yeah. Right. Especially this one, they seem to be treated. I'll talk about the Geneva Convention was respected in this camp. Right. So they're which is very strange when I think about it because they're executing people left, right and centre. They are sort of, in this camp anyway, maintaining respect for the prisoners. Captain Reinhold Eggers was the German security officer of the camp. He's sort of like the bad guy in this story who's actually not that bad. He later wrote a book about his time at Colditz, and he remarked how the castle had originally been built for people keeping people out. He wrote, "The castle was built to be impossible to get into. My job is to make it impossible to get out of." Because you think about it, that's a castle.
Bad boys. Yeah. What you
yeah.
gonna do?
Yeah, an explosion goes off and he just keeps walking slowly.
Puts his sunnies on. So fucking cool.
So, because when you do think about a castle, it is, I'd never thought about it this way, but it is mainly to keep people out, not to keep people
in. A castle,
in.
Yes. A prison, no.
Yeah. So I'm going to go through some of the escape attempts from Colditz. Some are very successful, others end in tragedy. Another explosion behind me.
Awesome.
How about I give them chapter titles? Because I've done
yes,
that here.
Yes, David, yes.
The Key.
Oh, my God.
Chapter one.
Oh, my God, I love this. Yes.
At first, the different nationalities kept to themselves, and the Brits formed an escape committee.
Amazing.
Which is so British, especially of the 1940s.
So British. Pat- all right, then, chaps.
All right. I say. Pat Reed was chosen to be the leader of the committee. He was 31 years old and before the war had trained as a civil engineer, and he was determined to escape. Pat was constantly on the lookout for ways to escape, and one day early on in captivity, he noticed that in the prisoner-run canteen, there was a cover on the floor that he speculated could lead to a shaft. He was like, there's a hole there. Why have they covered that up, eh? So one day, Pat got his friends to distract one of the guards who had the key to the canteen around his belt loop while he quietly stole it and he pushed it into a bar of soap.
Very good.
The outline of it. Perfect outline of the key that could be copied. To make a copy of the key, the British soldiers used an iron bed leg and filed it down until it was exactly the shape of the key.
No.
Which takes a fucking long time. It takes ages. But it fit the lock perfectly.
No.
One night, Reed snuck out of his room and into the canteen and was able to find that the manhole led to a sewer which went underneath the thick courtyard walls and then underneath a lawn, above of which is soft ground that you could dig through. The only problem was that the lawn was patrolled by a German soldier. To get around this, they bribed the soldier with 500 marks to leave his post that night.
How did they have money?
They got a bit of money, and throughout this, they're being sent packages from back home.
Okay, you can be sent packages.
You can be sent packages, and you get stuff from the Red Cross as well.
You know what I would have expected a Nazi to do in that case would be just to take the money and kill them and not do it. Yeah, I'll take that bribe.
Matt, hashtag not all Nazis.
Come on, Matt. They're not all Nazis. Not all Nazis are Nazis.
Is that true?
Factually, no. Reed selected 12 officers to go with him, and they snuck into the canteen one night and all crawled through the sewer. They got underneath the lawn, and as Reed dug a hole and poked his head through the grass, he looked up only to find a bunch of German soldiers looking down at him.
Aww.
As Matt speculated, the soldier that they tried to bribe had double-crossed them. You can't trust a Nazi. Your gut instinct is absolutely right.
Good for you, Matt. Good for you, Matt's gut.
Yes. Reed yelled at his comrades who were still in the sewer to run back, but once they got out the other side, they found other soldiers waiting for them at the entrance. The Englishmen didn't know what to do, so they just started laughing in the Germans' faces. The German soldiers were very confused by this. The guard they tried to bribe kept his 500 marks. He got extra paid leave, a promotion, and the War Service Cross. So it worked out really good.
Whoa!
That's a really good deal.
It worked real good.
Holy shit.
The Geneva Convention said POWs that try to escape shouldn't be shot, and Eggers and the Germans abided by this rule, so none of the soldiers were shot. But the usual punishment for attempting to escape was 3 weeks in solitary confinement.
For all of them?
Yep.
Shit. That's heaps of weeks, eh?
Oh, it's so many weeks, eh?
But do they have enough solitary
yeah.
confinement?
All three of you have to go to the solitary confinement room.
But don't
now.
Look at each other.
Well, that's it, yeah. Like, do they have enough space to keep them separated?
And if they don't, they just make someone stand in the corner and look at the wall.
Or you're just on a roster. Like, okay, your punishment will be in 6 weeks' time because I've got two other people in that room before
you'll be
you.
In there.
You're on a waiting list.
Your punishment will be in 36 weeks' time.
Yeah.
Until then, think about what you've done.
Until then, business as usual, but you're gonna get in trouble later.
Chapter two, the first taste of freedom.
Oh, this sounds positive.
Last time I forgot to get a clue from the chapter title, which was The Key, which makes sense. Now, Matt, what can we read out of the first taste of freedom?
I reckon they're going to eat French fries.
Yeah.
I reckon.
Freedom fries.
I reckon they're not going to use a key in this one.
Ooh, and you know.
Much to the Brits' annoyance, the first home run didn't go to them. In fact, the first prisoner to successfully escape Colditz was French soldier Alain Leray.
French fries.
You were right.
You were right. God, your gut is on fire today.
It's burning. It's burning up.
His escape wasn't as well thought out and planned and more spur of the moment. Another part of the Geneva Convention was that the soldiers needed fresh air and exercise.
They had
a courtyard, but there's so many of them, they're not really getting much exercise. So every 10 days, they were marched out of the castle at gunpoint and down to a local park to play football.
What?
The park was surrounded by barbed wire, so the best place to attempt an escape was during the walk to or from the football field. Elaine, the Frenchman, had already escaped from a previous POW camp and was always on the lookout for a quick getaway. Before the game, Leray was able to find some civilian clothing, and he put this on underneath his uniform. And although there was a guard only 10 metres behind him, on the walk back up the hill, they passed a sharp bend where he was momentarily out of sight. Oh.
No.
And there was an abandoned building that they walk past every day, every time they go to this. And fortunately, he tried the door and it was unlocked. So he dashed around the corner and hid inside the building. The Germans at the guardhouse of Colditz failed to notice that a man had gone missing. And after more than an hour, Leray, now wearing civilian clothes, was able to emerge from his hiding place.
What?
All he had to do was to scale a small wall and then he'd be free. The simplicity of his escape was astonishing, and subsequently a number of POWs tried to emulate it, but without success.
Mm. How did they figure it out?
Well, they didn't, because the Germans, who discovered Leray's absence only later that evening when they did a roll call, never worked out how he'd done it, concluding amongst themselves that he must have escaped by going over the roof of the courtyard and climbing down a lightning conductor.
Yeah, you'd assume it would have been a time where he was by himself.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that no one noticed he was missing till later when they're one-on-one with the guards. Yeah. So there's some guard who's going, yeah, I thought my person normally was like, you know, it was physically manifested in a human form.
Yeah.
But nah, maybe he was just always see-through.
People are like, where's your guy? Oh, I assume he's in the can.
Kind of like whenever we, because when I was playing basketball as a kid, anytime you did like man-on-man defense, if your person that you were supposed to be defending like got a goal or something, you'd be like, fuck, because that was literally your only job.
That was you.
Imagine being that guard. You'd be like, oh, fuck,
fuck,
my guy's gone.
Are they constantly yelling, man up, man up?
Yeah.
Keep on the man, keep on the man.
We were playing a zone D at the time.
Yeah, we weren't playing the game was, oh no.
Fuck. So Leray was able to sneak onto a train and he hid in the guard's van.
Lorraine on the train falls mainly
on the plane of a horse.
His patience started to wane and he went insane. When he got to Nuremberg, He mugged a man in the street, stealing his wallet and overcoat.
So great.
You got to play a little dirty. He was so close to freedom and decided to walk the last few miles to the frontier. But in a forest, he encountered a border patrol, eluding it only when he climbed a tree.
Oh.
Yeah. So then he got on another train, and not wanting to give himself away by buying a ticket, he climbed onto the front of the train and just lay down across the front of the train. It was nighttime, and he calculated that the glare of the train's headlights would ensure that no one could see him. He crossed into neutral Switzerland, and he achieved the first home run.
Oh, wow. Well done. That's awesome.
There we go.
Yeah, so he had the money for a ticket, just didn't want to.
Because
he stole the wallet, but they'd probably ask for identification.
Right.
And I don't think some of these people that escape, it's very handy if you speak German, but not everyone does.
Yeah.
Man, how tense are those moments in The Great Escape where the escapees are chatting to, like they're having their passes checked or whatever.
And you just have to keep your mouth shut.
They're talking in German or whatever and just watching it, I'm sweating bullets going, holy shit, these Nazis are onto them, I swear to God.
And then they just stamp passport. Yeah. Chapter 3, The Mattress.
Ooh,
oh,
there's going to be some boning.
Yep. Squeaky mattress.
There's only one way out of this place. Boning my way out.
Quick, everyone, fuck your guard. Distract them with sex. That's what the Germans want. And when they fall asleep after that cigarette, you just make a run for it. So the... So the Brits were happy that anyone got a home run. So it's a victory for everyone, but they wanted one of their own. A bit of morale amongst the chaps.
Yeah.
They chose Peter Allen, a small Scottish man who spoke German, to attempt the next escape.
Imagine German in a Scottish accent.
You'd have to do pretty well, wouldn't you? One problem was, so when you're captured, you don't put a uniform on. You just continue wearing your military uniform that you were captured in.
Oh.
That's the sort of thing. Like when you watch Hogan's Heroes and they're wearing, you know, the US uniform. But Peter Allen, the Scottish man, when he was captured, he was wearing a kilt, something that would make you stand out really bad in Germany.
Yeah.
So if you get, even if you got out, people would be like, why are you wearing a kilt?
Yeah.
Your German would have to be pretty good to get out of that. So they rummaged around and got him some clothes. They did a lot of their own, like, sort of hand sewing. That amazing.
Yeah, all these stories, like, blow me away. Making your own key. Or it's like the what's the rock? What's that one San Fran place called? All those things they did.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And sewed together a boat with raincoats and those paper mache heads. Yeah. Like, all those things blow my mind. How many
balloon
skills people
mind.
Balloon my mind. How people have, like, skills and things. It's like,
I'd be useless in these escapes.
Useless.
They'd be like,
you'd be useless.
I'm ruddy useless, I tell you.
They would not have sent you to the castle, I don't think.
No.
I think he'll be okay. Yeah, they've just put you in someone's backyard.
Don't.
With, like,
don't
a
leave.
Lowish gate.
Ah. And then you just stay there.
Do you promise not to leave? Yes, sir.
Good boy. Like, ruffle your
hair.
Here's
a biscuit.
Yeah, and off they go.
Here's
come back 20 years later, you're still there.
Here's a biscuit. It's a dog's biscuit. I'll eat it anyway.
You live your life as a dog from now. I'm can good, see that happening to you in war.
I'm a good boy.
You are a good boy.
Our dogs live to be 60 years old.
He stands on his hind legs. Okay, the mattress, sorry.
I said, rummaged around, got him some clothes that wasn't a kilt. They got him a jacket and they put it on this short baby-faced man and tried to make him look like a member of the Hitler Youth. That's how young he looked. The men used some straw mattresses that they'd made. They often did sort of tasks like that. Were going to be delivered somewhere out of the castle. So they hid Peter Allen inside one of the mattresses, which essentially were like sacks filled with hay.
Yep.
So they sewed him inside. They put like a bunch in a pile, then him in the middle, then a bunch more over the top of him.
This sounds like a guy who's about to die.
Yeah, I was going to say, how does he breathe?
Well, his biggest problem was trying not to sneeze.
Yeah.
With all the hay. He was in there for hours. Also, his other problem was that guards often used bayonets to prod cargo to check for people trying to run away.
Makes sense.
But Allen was lucky and he wasn't stabbed this time. Now, the mattresses were carried out of the castle and were dumped in a local barn. And after lying still for a few hours, when it was quiet, he simply got out, dusted himself off and walked to the train station. Called it closest. Like
the idea that someone has gone bag of hay into the barn, bag of hay into the. Well, this is a heavy bag of hay.
Into the barn.
Into the barn.
Well, someone's having a double plush bed.
Ooh, fur mattress.
Must be some goose feathers in here.
Yeah, they're heavy.
Oh, there's like a whole man's worth of goose feathers in here. Oh, well, into the pub. Colditz's closest neutral country, Switzerland, was 300 miles away. So once you were out of the castle, the journey really was only just beginning.
Mm.
Allen didn't want to go to Switzerland. He wanted to go to Vienna in Austria. The resistance had been able to get him a little bit of German currency, and he took a train as far as his money would take him. But when he got off, he estimated he was still 7 full days of walking to his destination.
He's really been around, Peter, hasn't he? He's been to cities that never closed down, from New York to Rio and old London town. But no matter how far or how wide he's roamed, you know, he's on his way to the
to
next
Austria.
Country.
Austria, yeah.
The guy sang that song was named Peter Allen.
Yeah, that's right.
Good stuff all.
I've been to cities that never close. It's a Qantas ad. Anyway.
I hope you enjoyed that in America.
Yeah, enjoy. Google it.
So he's 7 days walk away. He's got very little supplies, just a couple of pieces of chocolate to keep him going.
Oh, he's fine.
So he decided to take a risk. Mm-mm. He flagged down a car to hitchhike. And it turned out to be a considerable risk because the car he flagged down was an SS vehicle.
Oh, my
The German
God.
Secret police.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Lucky his German was fantastic and he was able to say he was an engineering student. Alan recalled that the ride was the scariest moment of his life. Quote, to be vulgar, I nearly needed a new pair of trousers.
That is vulgar.
He nearly shat himself.
But imagine that in a, imagine that in a Scottish accent. I nearly needed new trousers. It makes it way funnier.
Does it, Dave?
Yeah.
Say the whole thing again?
No, I'll just say, no, I won't even say it. The car took him 50 miles, and when he got out, he said he gave the most impressive Hitler salute you've ever seen. To try and be like, oh, yeah, I'm a Nazi.
Whoa.
Try and win him over. He finally made it to Vienna after 6 days of constant travel and not having eaten. He was exhausted, and even though he'd made it to Austria, he wasn't safe yet because at that time, Vienna was under Nazi occupation. They did, however, have a US embassy, and because the USA was neutral and hadn't entered the war at that point, he hoped they would offer him a sanctuary. They rejected him and refused his help, despite the fact that his stepmother, Lois Allen, who for our UK listeners I read was the founder of Fuzzy Felt Toys, she was a US citizen and he felt that they would provide him a safe place because of this. But he was wrong and super pissed off, so they just rejected him.
Oh, that's brutal.
So he went back out into Vienna. He was starting to faint from fatigue because he hadn't eaten in so long, and he asked a stranger if there was a Red Cross nearby where he could get something to eat. The stranger said, oh, you can come, you can find some help in here. And when Alan entered the building, he'd realized that he'd accidentally walked into a police station. He had no papers to back up his engineering student story. And now exhausted and starving, he had no choice but to come clean and tell them he was an escaped prisoner. He was arrested and taken all the way back to Colditz, where he was locked up in solitary confinement.
No!
So he didn't get a home run.
Don't go to Austria. Just go to Switzerland.
No.
Oh,
the
USA.
He thought he was certain that they'd offer him sanctuary.
Well, why? No.
Is that, does that make sense? I don't know if, like, because they were neutral at that time. Was that okay for them to basically make a guy go back to Nazi prison?
I know, but I think that also be, they'd probably also create diplomatic tension if they're like, oh, it's not our war, and we,
yeah,
we, you know,
yeah,
gave
right.
him somewhere. I don't know.
God, that sucks.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Chapter 4.
Ooh.
The French Tunnel.
That sounds like a sex move.
All right, grab your guard and give him the French Tunnel. Then when he's asleep, we'll all walk out the front door.
I know you save that for anniversaries, but right. Come on. It's time for a French Tunnel. Oh, yuck. Sorry. Sorry that I did that to us. Sorry.
In the
Matt, I'm sorry.
Apology accepted.
You won't look at me.
Because I've never even heard of a French tunnel.
He's looking at me again. You can continue.
In the early 1940s, 9 French officers organized a long-term tunnel digging project, the longest ever attempted out of Colditz. Lieutenant Bernard Casimayou gained access to the castle's abandoned and sealed-up clock tower and recognized that a way out of the prison was to tunnel underneath the castle's chapel and into the crypt. So they gained access at the top of the clock tower from the attic and wanted to dig a tunnel from the base, which was 35 metres below. To help get to the bottom, they started digging through each floor of the clock tower, tunnelling a small hole through each level until they got to the ground below. So basically, they just cut a hole in the floor, till they got to the bottom. After previous escaped attempts by Casimayo, the doors, one on each floor, which had provided access to the tower, had been bricked up in order to prevent further escape attempts. However, by sealing up the clock tower, the Germans had in essence provided a secure location where escape tunnel work could be done without notice.
Hmm.
So basically they'd bricked it up and they thought, we're not even going to look in there because no one can get in there. Uh-huh. But they got up way up high. So they tunneled down all the way to each floor to at the bottom of the clock tower, and they started to dig. They got 5 meters below the tower and found themselves in an old wine cellar. They needed a place to deposit the earth that they were digging up. So every night, 10 bags of 20 kilos of debris were dragged up by ropes made of bed sheets all the way from the hole at the bottom to the top of the clock tower. So they had to basically lever and pulley them up with bed sheets 35 meters.
Whoa.
20 kilos, which would
You'd
have been
buff as, wouldn't you?
Crazy. 10 every night.
What a great work.
You're losing more than 5 kilos.
Mm. Oh, for sure. The men then started digging under the chapel, hoping to get into the crypt, but they ran into a solid wall of rock. To deal with this, they got steel poles out of the clock at the top of the tower and used them as battering rams just to smash the shit out of the rock. This worked a treat. The tunnel itself was extremely sophisticated and even had lights that the men had made out of old food cans. So they're extremely resourceful, these people. It's amazing. They got through the rock and tunneled 13.5 metres under the chapel, only to find that there was no crypt there. All they did find was a solid wooden beam of heavy oak timber blocking their path. It was decided that they would saw through this beam using a knife that was stolen from the German's cutlery and then had saw teeth cut into it using a rock.
Wow.
So they're making their own saws. And with all this action going on below the chapel, the men of the tunnel were worried that they would be overheard by the guards inside, so they developed an alarm system. One of the prisoners would sit in the chapel, usually one of the French soldiers who back home had been a priest, so it wouldn't be weird that he was hanging out in the chapel all day. He would be holding a switch to the light in the tunnel, and if the guard came, they would switch the light off. So the men soaring below through this wooden oak, if the light went out, they stopped soaring instantly and just waited till the light went back on.
Wow.
Which sometimes was a long time. Casimiro soared through the wooden oak beam every day for a week before he got through it, because he's just doing little bit. Because you can't be too loud, only to find that behind it was 6 more identical wooden beams.
Oh, no.
So he just kept soaring. It took weeks. He got through them, but he found that there was no crypt and, more importantly, no way of getting out to escape. So he was well, we've been digging this way. How about we turn the tunnel this other way and we'll keep going until we find a way out? So they're just digging, sort of digging aimlessly, hoping to get out. He swung the tunnel around, hoping to find a way out through a different direction, only to be facing a 3-meter-thick rock wall that he had no hope of cutting through or knocking over. So if you can't go over it, you can't go through it, you go under it. They tunneled straight down for 5 meters, which getting in. So to get in, you have to go into the attic at the clock tower, go to the bottom there, go, you know, which is another 5 meters down. Then you go through a 15-meter-long tunnel, which then turns, and now they've dug 5 meters below. So it would take like an hour just to get there. They kept digging horizontally once again once they dug underneath this rock bit. To this point, they'd been plotting and digging and soaring for 8 months. They were hell bent on getting their freedom.
Amazing that they've been able to keep it all under wraps.
Isn't that crazy?
It's a great effort.
How do you get away from your guard?
Well, it's not like they stay on you at all times.
Well, that's part of their fucking problem, isn't
it? They should.
So at times there's like 3-on-1 triple teaming.
Yeah. 3-on-1, that's the French tunnel. That's the French tunnel. 3-on-1.
Oh, I see.
No, a lot of them are like in guard towers and stuff like that. So they're not like handcuffed.
They should definitely go man on man.
They should definitely go man on man. You wouldn't have, like, how could you escape? How could you escape? How?
You couldn't escape.
You couldn't escape. Idiots. Yes, fucking Nazis.
What are the people in there? Yeah, the. What are they doing in the towers?
What the fuck are they doing in the towers? Well, these people are digging tunnels.
They should
tunnels.
All handcuff themselves to their own prisoner.
Yeah.
And then, like, this movie wouldn't be an escape one anymore. It would be like some sort of a comedy, maybe a romantic comedy, buddy cop sort
buddy,
of thing.
It'd be a buddy cop
buddy
thing.
Cop,
yeah. They'd bloody hate it. And then they'd come to appreciate one another. And then they wouldn't be able to live without one another.
And then the German would help.
Yeah.
A prisoner escape. Because they would have heard them talking about their sick wife or something. Yep. Like, I'm going to get you back home, buddy.
Yeah.
But in German.
Yeah.
I'm going to get you back home, und. I love you, Franz. Why do I sound German? I love you, Edgar. They swap voices for some reason.
Ah. That's what friends do.
Yeah. Pushes the boundaries, this movie.
Friends always swap voices. Don't they, Jess?
Yes.
Very good.
So they've been going for 8 months. Tunneling continued well into 1942. By then, the Germans knew that the French were digging somewhere based on the noise of tunneling reverberating through the castle at night.
They weren't talking to each other. Oh, it was reverberating through the castle.
Yeah, so you'd hear a bit of noise. You'd be like, what the fuck is that? But they just couldn't find where they were doing it.
And the Germans couldn't either. The Nazis.
The Nazis, yeah. So they would hear the sounds at night a little bit of, and be like, what the fuck is that?
Stick to your man.
No. The French were not concerned because they thought that the tunnel's entrance was undetectable. But disaster struck one day when one of the German guards discovered the dirt they'd been hiding under the eaves in the attic. So they'd been digging this dirt out and putting it at the top of the clock tower, just stashing it. Huh. He reported it to Captain Edgars, the man in charge of security. He instantly knew that it was evidence of a tunnel. But even after searching the castle from top to toe, he couldn't find evidence of the entrance to this tunnel. He didn't think to look into the clock tower. I guess he thought if you were going down, why would you start at the highest point in the whole castle? Yeah. Which is kind of genius in a way.
Yeah.
Edgars kept finding more and more rock and earth around different parts of the camp. And from the different types of soil, he could tell how close they were to escape.
Wow.
He knew that the tunnel was now outside the castle's walls because the dirt had...
Just dig up.
Yeah, so they just had to dig up. It's gone from rock to actual, you know, just soil. He thought that they were only days away from freedom. The French tunnellers continued their digging, but Edgars and his men were now on the lookout and formed a search committee. There's many committees inside here.
Meet every Tuesday.
Trevor takes the minutes.
Trevor, can you read out the minutes from last time? Oh, with pleasure, sir. It says here, where the fuck are they? We need to find them.
Fuck.
Bake sale first Sunday of the month.
We need snacks next time. Someone bring snacks. At the beginning of 1942, the prisoners were just 2 meters of soil away from breaking out completely. They'd been digging now for 9 months. But then, Edgars found the tunnel entrance. The German soldiers very bravely lowered a small boy down. And
God, you're lucky you weren't around back then, Dave.
I know.
You'd be the first one in the tunnel.
Go on there, young Dave. Oh, no! Apparently what the kid yelled was, prisoners! Little shit. You'd be like, shut the fuck up.
No, nothing down here.
Nothing to report.
Shut up.
I'll take you with me. The jig was up.
No. Oh,
brutal.
The search committee that found the entrance to the tunnel was rewarded with extra leave. Edgars himself was so impressed with the work that had gone into it that he commissioned a survey of the tunnel. And a weird thing the Germans did was whenever they foiled one of these escapes, they got the prisoners to reenact their escape attempts so they could take photos of them. So there's all these photos of like sad-looking English and Frenchmen sort of like poking their head out of like a toilet or something because they were trying to escape through it.
Do you like how the Nazis, like, whenever someone busts something, they give those people who were smart enough to figure it out leave?
Yeah.
So eventually...
There's no smart people left.
All their best guards are going to be on leave.
And they're just left with the night shift. Oh, man.
This is fun.
See, French tunneling is always a disappointing experience.
Well, not for everyone.
Doesn't it normally end with a boy being
lowered down
and yelling out prisoners,
and men yelling, "You shut the fuck up! Shut up!"
It's a wild thing.
It's exciting.
It's a wild manoeuvre.
Chapter 6: Teaming up with the Dutchman.
Oh, this is another sex move.
It does sound like it.
Yeah, this is...
I hadn't planned on this. So
threesome is what you're describing there.
Some of them are less intriguing and...
It's an orgy.
Teaming up with a Dutchman makes a threesome to you. I guess your picturing is pre-coupled. Then you're bringing in the Dutchman. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah.
That makes sense to me.
The Brits were still yet to get a home run, so they decided to team up with the Dutch. Englishman Aaron Neave teamed up with Dutchman Tony Luton. Neave had noticed from his window in solitary confinement that there may be a path underneath the stage of the castle theatre. So just a side note, the prisoners were allowed to put on shows for each other in the hope that it would distract them from escaping.
Sure.
Yeah. And some of them would...
A quick ball change. A 2, 3, 4.
Well, they'd have to play the male and female parts, and I've seen photos of them. Some of them were very convincing women.
Oh, there's pictures of my dad in the 70s at an all-boys school, like, dressed up as a woman, and he was a very pretty girl.
Very good.
He's gorgeous. It's So like, who's this babe? That's your father. Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
I'm confused.
So am I.
I went to a boys' high school. I'm sure I played a woman.
Played men.
I had long hair back then, so I think I was the obvious choice. And obviously very beautiful.
Of course.
as all women
and
are.
And a very good actor.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Amazing. Ooh,
I say.
Niamh was right about the tunnel under the stage, but the problem was that whilst the path got them out of the prisoner's courtyard, it led to another walled courtyard occupied by soldiers. To get them through this, the men decided to dress as German soldiers. The Dutch had coats that looked a bit like the German coats, except the collar on the German coat was green, so they added this on with paint from the theatre. They used to build the sets. They also had to make fake German officer hats, including the prominent Nazi eagle, which they decided to make out of linoleum and sew on.
Hat, like, to make them believable would just be much work.
It's crazy. Luton was dressed as a captain, and the Englishman, Airy Neave, was made out to look like a first lieutenant. The disguises were considered, quote, good enough to pass on a dark night.
That's all you need. Most nights are pretty dark.
Yeah. They were a bit worried about the plan. They didn't know what their fate would be if they were caught in a German uniform. They thought that perhaps that would be a crime that they would punish with death. But they went through with it anyway, very bravely. They went underneath the stage and into the soldiers' garrison. Airy Neave and his companion, who were dressed as high-ranking officers, were told by the first sentry that there was, quote, nothing to report, sir.
Mm.
How good is that? They asked the second German soldier, who was about to challenge them, why he was not saluting them. So they sort of distracted him. And he was about to be like, show me your paperwork. And they were like, where's the salute, boy? And they sort of, he was like, sorry, sir. Sorry.
Yeah.
He promptly saluted and they just walked on. Minutes later, they were throwing their German uniforms into the river and starting their journey to Switzerland. They did make it all the way and it was the first home run for the British. The Brits were rejuvenated by their success and it spurred on men to attempt more escapes. The group started acting more together with other nationalities after the success, and from 1942 on, the British escapologists were able to rely on the collective ingenuity of the camp.
Yeah.
So everyone's like, let's
do
this.
That makes sense to me.
Totally. What, I mean, so they're all fighting a war together.
Yeah, true.
You're all on the same team.
So, so what do we got? That's three countries with a run now?
Yes, we've got the Dutch, the English, and the French all have a home run. And in 1942, there was...
Where are the Aussies, hey?
There's very few Australians.
It's interesting they were calling them home runs, seeing as none of them are like classic baseball playing countries.
Yeah, true.
Could have called them a goal or something.
Mm. Mm-hmm. I guess the home part...
a touchdown.
Works.
An ace.
They're running away and they're going
a
home.
Hole in one.
Yeah.
Seven hole in ones.
Croquet.
Yeah, a croquet. We scored a croquet. Yeah.
I don't know how they score croquet, but I like it.
Well, one croquet, two croquet, three croquet, four, five croquet, six croquet, seven croquet, more, and you win. If you get to more,
you
win. Yeah.
It's like tennis.
Yeah, yeah.
More.
But more. Yeah. 15, even more like tennis.
15, 30 more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Now this, I'm
more
on
all.
In 1942, there was a record 82 escape attempts.
Whoa.
Nearly 2 a week. So most of them, they don't get out, but they're just constantly trying.
A couple of weeks, that would be exhausting for the guards.
Oh, they were.
Not that I'm on their side.
Well, the prisoners didn't treat the guards that well. They did what they called goon baiting, basically pissing off the guards with little pranks like water bombing them and, you know, setting fire to stuff, throwing poo at them. Mainly just harassing them to distract them from their real escape plan. So they'd have to deal with this little crappy sort of, you know, annoying stuff all the time whilst Jones is bloody under the stage drilling away.
Amazing.
They developed a series of complex hand signals to indicate to each other which way the soldiers were going.
Yeah, pointing?
Pointing.
Complex.
Well, they pointed with two fingers.
Oh.
Nazi fingers.
And the resistance at home was able to help them out by smuggling them things to help escape attempts. They send
mail
them
files.
Well, things are like that. They're given things that looked innocent, like inside. They'd send them a record to play on the gramophone.
Oh.
But then they'd smash the record and inside was a map. The backs of cards could also be put together for a giant map. They were given compasses hidden inside things like pens.
What?
All things that say once you're in, because, you know, you're in the middle of a country you don't really know very well. So the more help you can get once you're out, the better.
I was thinking that before, like with the Scotsman who is in the bag of hay and then walks to the train station. I wouldn't know where the fucking train station is. I don't know where the train station is in most Melbourne suburbs.
You've got to try and find the train.
Without Google Maps, I'd be like, just wander around aimlessly.
They also sent them pens with Google Maps.
Oh, wow. That's so handy. That was really handy.
Really handy. Chapter 6.
No, I thought we did 6. That
chapter,
was 6.
Chapter 7.
Yes.
The nudie run.
Yes! I'm on board already.
The leader of the British resistance, Pat Reed, was himself able to escape. He made another copy of a key to a door that would lead them to freedom, and after walking through a courtyard at night with three other men dressed in dark clothing and not being spotted by patrolling guards, which is amazing in itself. There's spotlights, there's men patrolling up and down everywhere, so they're just very quietly sneaking around. He got to the door, found he couldn't open it. He spent an hour jiggling it, trying to get the key in there. You know, like, you know, when you get a key in there, it's like a little bit there, and a little bit, no, fucking shit. No avail. Never one to give up, he decided to take the men to another place where he heard that there might be a storage cellar. He was right, and inside there was a tiny air shaft that initially he wasn't able to get through. He wasn't able to squeeze through it.
Oh, my God.
So he took all his clothes off.
Yes.
To make himself as small as possible.
And he found some olive oil.
Yeah. Well, he scraped the shit out of his body, apparently.
Oh, see, because he didn't lube himself up.
You gotta lube up.
You got to lube up.
He was able to squeeze through.
You got any grease? Oh, Simpsons. Willie. Willie.
Grease me up, woman. Oh. He and the three
yes.
men.
Yes. Yes, we do. Real good stuff.
He and the three other men, they all got naked, squeezed. So they throw their clothes through.
Yeah, that's smart.
Go through. Kind of.
I would forget to do that and I would just go out naked and then be like, oh, fuck.
Well, to me, maybe what they would have done was left the clothes with the last man and then he threw it. Because imagine if you threw your clothes through confidently and then you couldn't get through.
Yeah.
Then you're going to go back to the barracks and you don't have any clothes.
Great point.
But they made it and they made it to Switzerland. So another few home runs for the Brits.
Nose to arse up a tunnel like that, nude.
Ooh.
That's French tunneling.
And you've. No, that's French tunneling.
Now that's
you're
a
giving,
French
you're giving them. Quite a bit of space before you start going, aren't you?
Right.
You're not going to...
Well, you want to get out, though.
I mean,
but...
A lot of the time, you have already crawled through a sewer.
Right.
Interesting. Nose to ass.
Oh, imagine if someone farted in your face.
Oh.
What chapter am I up to?
Eight.
Chapter 8. A beautiful woman?
Oh,
question mark. It's not going to be a woman.
It's not going to be a woman. All beautiful.
Not all the escapes were successful, obviously.
Uh-oh.
So they're trying a lot of stuff. On the 5th of June 1941...
Well, two attempts a week, they'd all be out if they were all successful.
In 1941, in June, while returning from the park to the castle, walking back up the hill, some British prisoners noticed that a passing lady had dropped her watch. Being British gentlemen, one of the Brits called out to her, but the lady just kept walking instead of coming back for her watch. This aroused the suspicion of the German guards, who until that point, it hadn't crossed their mind that a civilian woman shouldn't be in this restricted area in the first place. They just sort of all looked at this beautiful woman. Upon inspection, she was revealed to be a French officer dressed as a very respectable lady. Back to the castle.
Oh, but the English guys accidentally...
Excuse me, dropped your watch.
This is what chivalry gets you.
Yeah.
She's thinking, fuck off.
But, like, also, time your escape a bit better so that people aren't walking past you. But, yeah, why are you... Oh, okay, yep.
Bummer.
Chapter 9, The Sparky.
Oh, somebody... the lights went out and they got an electrician in.
Oh, my God, exactly right. One of the men looked remarkably like the local electrician, which is crazy. A man named Willie.
Of course his name's Willie.
So they purposefully blew the circuits of the lights to the castle. You know, just fucked around with the fuse box so that Willie would have to be called out to the castle. Willie came in and a few minutes later, the officer that looked like Willie went out dressed in a similar outfit to him.
So good.
Tried to walk out through the front gate. Unfortunately, the fake Willie showed a pass that had just been updated. So he wasn't allowed out. He was caught and there's a photo of the two Willies that they... the Germans took a photo of them together, and they look so similar. Oh, right. Crazy.
Should I Google two willies now and see what comes up?
Yeah, no. Google two willies.
Google two German willies.
Two German willies.
That'll be much safer.
No. Two German penises. Wait, no.
You idiot.
German willy penis. Oh, hang on. Chapter 10, The Ghost.
Oh, my God. Okay, firstly, sorry, can I just quickly go back one step and say that that was amazing that I picked.
That was incredible. That amazing. From Sparky, which is...
All right, Matt. Which only means one thing. It's amazing that you knew
that. Get fucked. Okay, you pick this one. I reckon
we should say that's slang for an electrician in Australia.
Go on, Matt. Sparky.
I think that's an English thing, isn't it? Or is it?
Well, we do it.
This seems like a bit of a colloquial Aussie thing.
Okay, maybe. Matt?
I think a lot of our colloquialisms are.
If it's that easy, nail it from The Ghost. Go on. Tell us what happens in this one.
Yeah, as if you know already. Do you want me to say it?
Yep.
Well, one of them kills himself so he can walk through the wall to safety.
Can I have a guess?
Not that far off.
One of them puts a sheet over himself, walks around for a bit going, ooh. It's a bit too spooky for some of the guards, and out he goes.
Ooh, I'm an electrician. Ooh.
Not a Sparky, he's a spooky.
Just for our overseas listeners, a spooky is someone who looks like a ghost in Australian colloquial language. Some of the prisoners were known as ghosts. What they would do is fake an escape attempt, but they would never actually leave the castle. They would hide, and whenever someone would make a successful escape attempt when they got out of the walls, once they were gone, the ghost would reappear and pretend to be them, so they'd never notice that person was missing, for a couple of days. So they'd sleep in the person's bed, eat in their spot in the mess hall, and be counted to them in the lineup in the morning, sort of take their place, wear their uniform, that kind of thing. Then after a couple of days, they would disappear again, meaning the Germans didn't know that the escapee had a 2-day head start. So they'd be like, Elaine's just left, really.
So they'll be looking in a smaller perimeter.
Yeah, they'd be close by, but really he's halfway across Germany.
So good. I love this.
Shit, what teamwork.
Oh, the ghosts often lived a tough life, often hiding in uncomfortable spots, and they were no longer able to write to their families because they had to pretend to not be there anymore. Wow. So back home, they'd be getting, a letter every few months, but they'd have to cut that off.
Wow.
Crazy.
And they were just doing that for the greater good or the good of their friends or whatever. So cool.
Yeah, wow. I would not do that for you.
I hope those guys got some of those metal things.
For ghosting.
Yeah, ghost. There should be a ghost cross.
It's invisible.
Chapter 11.
Oh, my God.
The Red Fox.
Matthew.
You are the Red Fox.
Yeah. What? Is this one where the fox eats the prisoner and then jumps the fence and then the prisoner out again?
So close.
Great.
God, you're good.
Amazingly, the Geneva Convention had been respected up until this point, and all those that escaped and were recaptured simply returned to Colditz. It was a rule that escaping prisoners couldn't be shot. Mm. But in 1943, Hitler made a decree that any enemy soldier caught out of his uniform in either civilian or German clothing was to be treated as a spy and shot on sight.
Whoa.
So this made escape attempts much more dangerous. Because obviously you can't see. If you're outside the castle in your uniform, you're going to get about 5 minutes away. A man who was not afraid of this ruling was Britishman Michael Sinclair, who had escaped from prison so many times that he was nicknamed the Red Fox.
Classic multiple escaping animal.
He's sly?
He had a big rep. Big rep. It had been noticed that he looked a lot like, amazingly again, a German guard commander that everyone called Franz Joseph.
Because that was his name?
No, actually not his name. He was nicknamed that because he looked like an Austrian leader from the late 19th century.
Wow.
I believe.
Okay. All right.
His real name was harder to pronounce and everyone called him Franz Joseph, so I'm just going to call him that. Franz was a high-ranking commander, and if Michael Sinclair could impersonate him, The plan was to relieve the German guards of their duties, swap them with British soldiers dressed as guards, and if successful, the British would have about 3.5 minutes for as many men as possible to descend from the British quarters, overlooking the side of the castle via ropes made of sheets.
Oh my God.
And they could all just make a run for it. Basically, they wanted to do that before the real German guards returned to the guardhouse with the real Franz Joseph, where they discover the ruse. See, they have about 3.5 minutes. This plan took many months. For one, they had to make fake guns and uniforms so that three men could look like German officers. And Michael Sinclair had to study Franz Joseph's mannerisms so he could impersonate him perfectly. Also, he needed to get a sweet fake mustache because he looked like him, except he didn't have a mustache.
Grow one.
Some of us can't, Jess. I've spent my entire life trying to grow a Franz Joseph.
Feels like that might give the game away as well.
Yeah, if you start growing and people are like, man, look a lot like Franz Joseph. Shut up.
He's coming here soon, isn't he? Shut up.
Shut up. Stop talking. Finally, the night came after many months and the fake Franz Joseph and two Brits dressed as German soldiers with fake guns made of wood, crazy, put the plan into action whilst dozens of prisoners watched on silently. The first two sentries were replaced without argument. So he walked up to them and said, you're relieved, this guy's taking over from you. And because he was such a high-ranking guy, they didn't question him. All they needed to do now was relieve the man on the front gate. The fake Franz Joseph walked up to him. The soldier guarding the gate refused to budge, remaining adamant that his orders were to stay put. Sinclair was now faced with the choice of either persisting with the stubborn guard or making a run for it with his two colleagues. He decided to continue with the ruse. He became increasingly annoyed with the sentry yelling at him in German, and it was not long before other guards arrived from all over the camp because he was yelling so much. In the confusion, it appeared as if Mike, dressed as Franz Joseph, was reaching for a revolver, which he didn't even have, so the guard shot him. He fell to the ground, and the disguise was so good that initially the Germans thought that the real Franz Joseph was shot. They started panicking because they thought they'd shot like a senior guy. Amazingly, Michael Sinclair survived.
Shit.
Taken to the prison hospital. But sadly, he went on to be the only soldier killed whilst attempting to escape Colditz when in 1944 he again made a break for it. He was shot twice. He was buried with full military honours and the Germans even made a homemade British flag to bury him in because they had such respect for him. And he was posthumously awarded the Distinguished Service Order. After the war, he's the only lieutenant to be awarded the medal during the whole Second World War for an action in captivity.
Holy shit.
So, yeah.
That's amazing.
Chapter 12.
Oh, my God, there's so many chapters.
I believe this is the final chapter. Chapter 12. The cock.
Finally one that's not a sex thing.
Yeah, finally. I was getting really sick of
Just
his
talk about
potty
the
mouth.
War, mate.
It's all smut with this one, isn't it?
Sadly, as the war went on, the escape attempts became harder and harder. Probably the most ridiculous escape attempt of all was the Colditz Cock. The Colditz Cock was a name given to a glider that men attempted to build in order to fly out of the castle.
Amazing.
Because roosters can't fly, is that? They can glide, though. I guess that's the point, right? From a height, a chicken could sort of glide down.
I suppose if you threw a chicken off the roof, it could glide. I don't know.
It'd flap its wings enough to break its fall, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I reckon.
Let's try it. In the name of science, I'm going to throw this rooster from this castle.
We could just watch that that Wallace and Gromit, that Aardman movie, Chicken Run.
Oh, yeah.
I think that might be the whole plot line. The
whole premise is that they can't fly properly. The idea for the glider came from Lieutenant Tony Rolt. Rolt, who was not even an airman, had noticed the chapel roof line was completely obscured from German view. So if you're up on the roof, they can't see you up there. He realized that the roof would make a perfect launching point from which a glider could fly across the river, which was about 60 meters below. Construction took months, and it was built completely in secret, hidden away behind a fake wall in one of the castle's attics. So they built a wall, and they'd come in, and the wall was so good that the Germans didn't notice that one of the attics was 6 meters shorter than the other. It's amazing. The takeoff was scheduled for the spring of 1945 during an air raid blackout. But by then, the Allied guns could be heard and the war's outcome was fairly certain. The British Escape Office decided that the glider should only be available for use in the case that the SS ordered the massacre of the prisoners as a way to get the message out to approaching American troops. So basically, they start shooting everyone, get in the glider.
Wow, that's full on.
The glider was approaching completion when the American army liberated the camp on the 16th of April 1945, so it had never been flown. But they proudly displayed it to the Americans.
That's great.
Imagine, how would the Americans have liberated the castle? Like, how, that's crazy.
Well, basically, they came into the town and they started shooting at the town, and they had to make...
shooting at the town?
Yeah.
Cop this town. Eat my lead.
Well, so then they were like, we gotta
take that letterbox.
Take that town hall. No.
There's that goat. There's that goat again.
Shut up.
The man of 1,000 noises.
Because they came in with new guns, the Americans.
What's that called?
That one. That's the Shema gun.
The Shema gun.
Shema gun.
I burnt down the butcher. In 1999, what I was saying was they were worried that the castle was going to get blown up because all these tanks came across the horizon. So they got all their, they got some white sheets and started, you know, white flag.
Ghosting.
Yeah.
And ghosted. It's a castle of ghosts.
Ooh,
you
don't blow us up. We are already dead.
Go shoot some letterboxes.
Good idea.
We better do what they say.
Yeah, no, 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 no.
Oh, no, they've got guns too.
Yeah, no, no, no.
Start impersonating gun sounds from inside the castle. Oh, they've got a shemow. Holy shit.
How did they get a shemow?
I thought we invented that. In 1999, a full-size replica of the Colditz glider was commissioned by Channel 4, and the glider was flown successfully in the year 2000 on its first attempt.
Wow. They would have made it.
With about a dozen of the veterans who had worked on it 55 years earlier, proudly watching on.
No!
It was their invention, so their specifications, and they even used the same tools that they had at their disposal and the same pieces of materials that they would have used.
So good.
That's incredible.
Actually, I was sure you were going to say it crashed and it busted in a massive explosion.
It didn't have anything explosive on it, but somehow it exploded.
And those veterans that had survived the war were killed by a glider. Imagine that.
I don't want to imagine that.
No. Their final words were, it's coming right for us.
Their final words were, so they tried to shoot it.
Shoot
down.
It out of the air with your shemow. Postscript. Epilogue. Volume 4.
Wow.
Home runs. This is titled. All in all, there were some 320 escape attempts from Colditz. So you're probably wondering, who got the most home runs?
Yes. Right.
Was it 230 attempts or 230 people attempted, if you know what I mean? Was it 230 single attempts? Or
320 escape attempts, yeah, sometimes with multiple people.
Great.
Home runs, 5 for the Polish, 14 for the British.
Ooh.
15 for the Dutch.
Oh, just
for winning the race on 22 Frenchies. Yes.
Wow. Good job, Frenchies.
Freedom fries.
And a final thing I will say here is an honourable mention must go to the final escape, the final person to make it. In 1945, before they were liberated, it goes to Lieutenant Colonel Miles Belfrage Reid, the oldest British prisoner in the camp. He feigned heart disease by smoking heavily and drinking concentrated black coffee prior to a medical examination, and he was sent home on medical grounds.
No. No fucking way.
They thought he had heart disease, so they sent him home.
They sent him home?
Yeah. So if you were really sick, they would send you home. And I think mainly because they didn't want to have to look after you.
Yeah, it makes sense. It'd be like, why would you want to have to nurse?
Use your resources.
Totally.
Wow.
I but really just expected long, them to kill someone like that.
How long before the liberation was that? Like, do you know?
Just a couple of months.
So that's pretty funny too, because it's like you nearly got out anyway.
Made it out.
But you would obviously you don't know that at the time.
No, you don't know.
Of course you don't. But that's pretty funny.
And it a is, post. It's
what a confusing organization the Nazis are.
Yeah.
They'll respect their enemies more than their country. Like they so brutal to
millions.
Their own people. Millions and millions of their own people.
Millions of people.
But then send home, oh, this old fella doesn't look too good.
Better send him home.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That's crazy.
Postscript. Calder's Castle is now a youth hostel and museum.
What?
And it's a dream of mine to go there. On TripAdvisor, it's ranked number one of three specialty lodging in Calder's.
Wow, so you could go sleep on a bunk bed in there or something.
Yeah, and there's also like the preserved bits where people escaped and you can look
We've
in tunnels
gotta
and
go
stuff.
There.
How cool would that be?
We've got to go there. That's
we've got a few German listeners, but please tell your friends because we need a few more to make it worth our time to do a live show from Colditz Castle. But how cool would
That'd
that
be? That'd be awesome.
But that is my report on Colditz Castle.
Great report.
Thanks, guys.
Fantastic stories. I do love an escape story.
Yeah, well done, Dave.
A lot of fun. And I will say, I remember Colditz because many years ago, probably when it was new, in about the year 2000, our Timeline in the UK made a great documentary on it, which is now all on YouTube. And I watched it again.
Mm.
So there's a link to it in the notes of the description. And yeah, I remember watching that with my dad when I was maybe about 10 or 11 and just being fascinated by it.
It's
and
amazing.
There's also a famous British board game called Escape from Colditz, apparently, which would be fun to play.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're a nerd.
Well,
which I'm not.
Which I am.
I'm not. I'm cool.
Well, I've had just wants to bully people so bad.
I want to.
Let me
bully.
Please.
Mm.
And thanks to everyone that's followed up and suggested that I do that topic after mentioning it on the Charles Upham episode. If you haven't heard that one, a great report that Jess did on a World War II badass. Probably one of the baddest asses we've ever spoken of. So check
Real
that episode
horrible
out.
Horrible ass.
Oh, man. You would not want to be crawling through a sewer with his bare ass in your face. Oh, God.
Oh, no.
Oh, dear. And, of course, it is that time of the episode to say thanks to everyone that's listened to it to this point and also to everyone that supports the show via Patreon.
I have two ideas. One, we give them a team within the castle, like a nationality.
Okay.
Why are you laughing?
Well, I mean, they've already got a nationality, but...
No, but just from this, from that. Or two, we decide whether or not they would have escaped. Oh, and how?
And what about we give them a chapter title.
Okay, that's better.
And whether or not it would have been successful.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what we're going to do now is we're going to thank some people that support us via Patreon, patreon.com/dogoonpod. And as announced on last week's episode, we have eclipsed our most recent Patreon goal, which means from April onwards, we'll be doing 2 bonus episodes a month. So they're exclusive to people that support us on Patreon. So if you want to have 2 bonus episodes of this a month, 24 a year, why not head on over to patreon.com/dogoonpod, and there's a bunch of other rewards and stuff on there, including thanking some people and giving them a nationality, apparently.
Okay, well, fuck, neither of you come up with a fucking idea. Yeah, all right.
Well, I did the chapters.
Okay, so it's a great idea. I'm sorry for ever speaking, and I'll never do it again.
Let's do all those things.
No, I think we should definitely talk about how they would escape.
And what nationality they would be.
Okay, let's do it all.
I'd love to thank, if I could, from Australia, from far north Queensland in Cairns, Kate Jordan.
Thanks, Kate Jordan. What nationality? Is she Jordanian?
Yeah. I guess that makes sense.
Pretty good, Jess. It's actually working.
And I imagine, like Air Jordan, she would have flown out of there just on her own body power.
Oh, so she would have
Should have
slam dunked out of there.
She jumped
the wall. From the foul line. She would have.
The foul line?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, what would her story have been called? The.
Air Jordan.
The Air Jordan. A bit of product placement in her title. She's sponsored. That's good. I like it. Thank you, Kate Jordan. Thank you, Air Jordan.
You must be so bored of Jordan things. But anyway, we just loaded you up with.
Thanks, Kate.
But you made it. You survived.
Oh, she made it.
Yeah, she made it back to Jordan.
Well done, Kate.
On you, Kate.
It's a long way back to Jordan from Germany.
She walked it. Oh, she, she rode on the front of a train for a little while, but yeah.
She's Superman. Superman on the front of a train.
I'd also love to thank, from Ontario in Canada, Mac Shildroth.
Oh, what a name.
Shildroth.
Shildroth.
Mac.
Mac.
What nationality? Scottish, surely.
Yeah.
Scott.
Chapter title, The Big Mac.
Yeah.
The Big Mac.
The Big Mac.
Oh. So they're a large person.
Ate their way out.
Yeah.
Ate through the brick.
Ate through the brick.
And ate a bit at a time.
Made it.
Made it, but not by escaping, but by people going, oh, they're sick. Let's send them home.
Yeah. And Matt that was the plan all along.
Matt got so sick from eating rubble that on day two, he just started vomiting everywhere. And they were like, get out of here, bud.
Yeah, this guy's
not okay.
Vomiting rubble.
He's really unwell. All right. Thank you, Mac.
And from examining the vomit, they could tell just how far he'd been digging. The different type of soil he was vomiting out.
Like, yeah, look, he's only a couple of days out.
Yeah, he's only a couple of days away from eating his way out. Maybe we should keep an eye on him. No, let him roam amongst the garden. We'll find it.
Let him be free.
We'll find his tunnel that he's eating his way through.
Would you like to thank some people, Dave?
I would. I would like to thank from New Holstein in Wisconsin, America. I would like to thank a very hard name to pronounce. It is first name XZ, surname Neil.
I think it's pronounced gz.
One more time.
Gz.
Z.
Gz.
Gz. Neil.
You're going straight for the Z sound. What we need from you is a bit of an X at the start.
Gz. Oh, gz.
Yes. No, you're doing it perfectly.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Oh, my God. I was talking to Dave. You were nailing it.
Dave.
I said we.
Yes, okay. Dave. Thank you.
All right, let me have another go. Come on, I can do this.
Go on, one more try. Yeah, there it is.
Neil, thank you so much. Where is Neil is Serbian.
Okay.
And how about I come up with the chapter title and you tell me what happened in it.
Okay. It'll be obvious, but okay.
The Bloated Hippo.
What he did was he got a hippo delivered to the castle.
Okay, which you could do through the Red Cross.
Yeah.
Could do that through the Red Cross. And the guards were like, what's going on here? So they all gathered because they, my name is a hippo. Turns out it's a Trojan horse sort of thing.
Ah, Trojan hippo.
Trojan hippo.
Much better chapter title, by the way. Trojan hippo, should have gone with that.
And a bunch of allies.
Trojan allies.
Came out of the hippo, killed everyone. And
killed everyone.
They all got away.
Even so the prisoners.
Did
everyone get out?
Everyone was dead.
Did get out, or they killed
one.
In the crossfire?
No, only one. Only one who got out.
They got out. Wow. So that's three home runs so far. Wow. Listen, it's pretty good. Thank you.
As if we're going to say somebody didn't make it.
Well, I've got a bad feeling about this next person.
Okay.
All the way from Libertyville, which is an ironic name if they do not make it.
Mm.
In Illinois, also in the USA, I'd like to thank Melanie Blair. Melanie Blair.
Blair Witch Project.
Love it.
Whereas Melanie is a French person.
Yep.
So the most home runs.
Yeah, go Mel.
Mel B.
Mel B. Her chapter title is The Sporty Spice. Even though that's
Mel C.
See, that's the confusion. Huh?
That was
on purpose.
Mel B pretended to be Sporty Spice.
Uh-huh.
And she was let out the front door.
Wow.
Because they're not big fans of
but
Sporty Spice.
But she did not make it. She drowned in the river. Wow.
Whoa.
Yeah. Jeez. Didn't see that coming, did you?
Didn't see that coming. Well, I mean, she could have got caught or something. You just went straight to death.
That's why you don't text and walk at the same time, Mel B. Oh,
that's true. Well played.
But her ghost lived on.
Oh, definitely.
Ooh.
I tell you what I want, what I really, really want. Zigga zigga.
Can I thank some people?
Yes, you certainly can.
Sir, I would like to thank from a local, from Carnegie, I would like to thank Tom Arthur. Tom Arthur. Thank you, Tom.
I'm thinking Carnegie Hall, USA.
Okay, interesting.
An American.
And what would Tom's chapter title be?
DW All Wet.
DW All Wet.
Yep. So it was a book my sister had as a kid, which featured the character Arthur.
Because DW was his sister.
Yes.
Right.
I can't remember anything about it, but I just always found that to be a very funny title.
Okay, DW
a whole book, a whole book about a little, I think, hamster.
Aardvark.
Just getting aardvark, going to the beach. Is there a whole story in that?
Yeah, absolutely there is.
Well, they agreed, I guess.
So is Tom Arthur's story, they just went to the beach?
Oh, look, I only gave you the title. What's the story?
Well, when you said DWOA, I just imagined that, again, it was another nude escape, but this time their clothes had gotten all wet and they just left a note saying, don't worry, all wet.
Yeah.
And then they did a nudie run and survived.
Don't worry, all wet.
Yeah, they were also running out of...
We're really worried. What should we do? Oh, these clothes are soaking. Don't worry.
These clothes are partially wet. Oh, no. They're all wet.
Thank you.
And did Tom make it nude?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
He still lives nude till this day.
Yeah.
So only...
As a sign of good luck.
Mel's the only one so far who hasn't made it.
Sorry, Mel.
Hope you feel bad about that.
Guess lives on.
And I'd also like to thank from Pearl River in New York... Gregory Gritman.
Sick name.
Good name, isn't it?
That's
GG.
Good.
GG.
Nationality, Matt?
Ghanaian.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
Ghanaian. Ghanaian. Fuck.
Okay. Chapter title?
The Ghanaian.
Oh, that's good.
I mean, it was quite rare to have a Ghanaian inside the Allied prisoner of war camp.
Seems odd, but okay.
And, yeah, posed as a... like a head honcho in the Nazi castle, poses the bishop of the castle, and
created a title.
Pope Gregory poses Pope Gregory.
Oh right, they just let him out. Didn't they?
Like, oh bloody hell, what are you doing in here? And they're like, that's what I was about to ask you.
I'm sorry, there's been a horrible administrative error. We've accidentally arrested Pope Gregory.
He's from the wrong time and place.
We've got to let him go.
He's clearly very lost.
But, you know, like the good shepherd, he'll find his way home or something.
So did Gregory make it?
Yes.
Wow, everyone made except Mel B.
But Mel B's ghost did.
Oh, right, sorry.
Sorry, Mel B. I really tried for you.
Thanks to everyone that supports the show at Patreon. We appreciate that a lot. Thank you and goodbye.
Laters.
Bye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.